And on to item 10, information on fire standby differential paid by Confire. Give Christina a moment here.
I'm going to need to leave because I have a 1:30 meeting, so I apologize. And as we discussed in closed session, this whole grid that we're going, my hope, and this could also sort of give some foundation for fire of where I hope this board goes. I am hoping that this board will direct staff to go ahead and relook at the MOU, at the language of the MOU, determine whether or not it can reasonably be interpreted as being mandatory requirement for on-call pay, and then request the Confire provide us data showing that if that is their interpretation, that in fact, across the board in any classification, there was in fact uniformity with this requirement that people perform. So I apologize that I have to leave to get to my other meeting, but that's just sort of my preface to the comments of where I sort of hope we will be going. And thank you all.
Question for Supervisor Anderson before she runs off. In terms of interpreting the reasonable interpretation, is that trying to get to an understanding of how that particular MOU involved has been interpreted by the parties?
Yes,
and
by
actually
both parties.
Applied?
Yes, and right. Yes, how it's been interpreted and how it's been applied. It has very specific language that could be interpreted as being more if you want to or not, or it could be very much very directive of yes, you will in fact, you know, perform your on-call hours just, you know, in a very uniform way as required, not voluntarily. So I would like us to look at that language, and if it needs to come back to the board for us to make that determination at some point of whether or not we believe that that's how it's been applied.
Right. I just wanted to distinguish between what parties may interpret an agreement to mean or say,
right,
versus
how it actually
has worked out on the ground and how it was implemented in the
right
course of dealing. Right?
And with that, the proof of that really would be is seeing the data as to the hours that have actually been performed,
right,
by people in that classification, whether there's uniformity in their service in that regard.
So it's kind of the rigorous analysis of how it actually played out, timesheets,
right,
what, you know, whatever it is, memos and so forth.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's my recommendation.
Right.
But again, I'm not here to implement that or suggest that the rest of you do it, but thank you. But I do have Don Pruitt, my staff member, who will stay. So he'll let me know. He'll fill me in on the rest of the meeting just so. So again, I apologize.
Thank you.
Thank you.
City Council.
Okay, so maybe we can back up a little bit. Just to kind of explain why we're here. At the November 28th meeting, there were concerns raised by Confire regarding the exclusion of standby pay from the retiring member's final average salary. And at that time, the board had expressed its interest in discussing the review process that staff go through regarding these types of pay codes and specifically with Confire. So just to provide you an overview of what staff does, pay codes are reported to CSERA as pensionable, so when we go to review a member's retirement calculation, we look to see if that pay code meets three different standards, and Tim kind of talked about this before, but we look to see if the standby is during normal working hours set forth in the applicable employment agreement. It must be required by the employer to be worked by the employee as distinguished from voluntarily worked, and three, must be ordinarily worked by all others in the same grade or classification at the same rate of pay. So we look at that pay code, we go back to the employer, we request additional documentation to try and figure out if we can meet all three of these requirements. And that does cause some delay in calculating retirements because it takes time to get all of that information, go through that information, and then see if it can be included or not included. When it starts to take quite a bit of time, as Tim mentioned, we will put the member onto payroll without the pay code as we continue through the review process. And then if it's determined that it should be included, we include it and recalculate and go through a similar process again. So all of these requirements were adopted by the board in a policy that we followed and came about after a lawsuit that was filed when AB 197 came about. And through that lawsuit, there was a writ filed, and the writ laid out some criteria that we needed to look for. In April of 2013, the board was in the middle of the lawsuit and took action to exclude standby and on-call, and the writ responded to that by saying you can't automatically exclude it. So this policy helps us look at those items when we go to evaluate the member's pay code. So if there's any questions around that, or?
Any questions for Christina?
I'm sorry. I think something that was raised before is that.
What?
About contributions that weren't pension contributions that were still being deducted from the check but weren't going to count. So that's so still up in the air, and we're still waiting for resolution of AB 197 to decide what to do with all that.
Correct. So we're still collecting contributions on this pay code because the employer is reporting them to us, and that's why we see them at the point of retirement and go through this review process. If it's determined that the pay code is not included in retirement, we don't refund the contributions to the member because that's also under current litigation.
Okay, so depending on the result of the litigation, then the refund could come. Okay.
Right.
I have a question.
Yes.
So the review process is done by staff? And when you say staff, who's doing the review process? Because I know it does go before legal as well,
It starts at the retirement counselor level. So once they identify the pay code, they'll start pulling together some of the information, usually regarding what other members in the same classification are doing. So we're trying to, you know, pull all the payroll data for that. Mm-hmm. And then it'll escalate to the supervisor, and the supervisor will start communicating with the employer on any additional MOUs, employer agreements, anything that might meet some of the others. And then it will go to the manager for review once all of the information has been gathered together. It goes to compliance, legal, and myself, and it's all reviewed before we make a determination.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I have a question. What labor groups receive on-call as comp earnable?
I don't have that information in front of me.
Okay.
We could definitely pull it together.
Do you have comment cards?
Yeah, I do. Any other board questions at this time? Okay, I'll now invite comments from the public. I have one card indicating Chief Carman may want to speak. Floor is yours.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I think I wanted to clarify one point, and I think our concern was the way that CSERA had decided to determine whether the one of the three standards was being upheld, and that was whether the standby time was during the employee's normal work hours or whether it was really expected of the employer to be for that employee to work the standby time to be in that position. And for us, the position in question is our assistant chief level. And at the time, what I was told was the one way that CSERA would consider that it was part of the employee's normal work hours is if the MOU language specifically stated that. And in this particular case, the MOU language, I don't think, specifically states that, nor does the court require that. That was a policy that CSERA adopted. And I think what I would ask moving forward is that in the absence of us, the employer, knowing that only the MOU language would be looked at, our MOU language isn't as specific as it should be, but we can and are more than willing to provide, as Supervisor Anderson said, we're more than willing to provide any of the paper trail documentation, job description, pay stubs, etc., that this board would like to see in order to verify that in fact all three of those standards have been met by the employer, and it was always our intent for that pay to be pensionable. So that's what I think I would like to ask that the board consider that. Certainly in our next round of negotiations, we are going to change the language in the MOU to make sure that we adhere to CSERA's policies. And I would hope going forward that, you know, in the future we can partner with CSERA before a policy change is made to let them know that, yes, we agree with it. We certainly don't agree with any pension spiking or voluntary standby pay. And yes, we do agree with the policy change, but please give us ample opportunity to make those changes in the MOU so that we can ensure our employees are, in fact, compensated the way that we always intended them to be. I would also say that I know that I offended some at my November speaking time when I said unethical. I certainly wasn't pointing the finger at any one person to say unethical. I just felt that it was an unethical policy to take deductions out of an employee's paycheck to lead them to believe that they were always going to be compensated for their standby time, and then at the final finish line of their career, that was pulled back from them. So please, if I offended anybody, I apologize for that. Thank you. One last thing on the presentation on the retirement process. I just sat yesterday with a counselor. I'm retiring in March, and I will say that the counselor, Tish was her name, was great to work with. The whole process of communicating with her on my estimates and everything concluded very well yesterday, and I so I appreciate the process is working. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief.
Any other members of the public?
No idea what his schedule was.
Okay, seeing none. Any further discussion?
Yeah, I guess I had a comment. I would quibble with some of what the chief said with respect to what's legally required that the CSERA return to the writ, which was submitted to the court, was approved by the court as the appropriate process to be compliant with its judgment. So it is, in fact, the law that applies to what we do as determined by the trial court. So in that respect, it you know, to me, it is legally required. I think in your comments you had separated the two, and I don't want to distinguish those because everything we do has to be compliant with the trial court's ruling.
And I understand that. What I meant to say was the policy that you, CSERA, adopted to only look at MOU language was approved as one way to assure that standard was met, but it is not the only way. When we reviewed the documentation, the question was asked of the judge if this satisfies the requirement. It did not ask if this was the only way to meet the requirement, and the judge's response was, yes, it satisfies the requirement. That was my point.
Well, you know, the way our system is, the courts have the final say. Right. So when the court determines that our process or our procedure or our proposal is compliant with its judgment, that becomes the law of the case. So it's the law.
But he did not say that it was the only way to meet the standard. The standard is, in fact, that it is in the employee's normal work hours. There are many ways to go about determining if that is the case. And I think one of the things that has been brought up is we can provide you all the documentation that should prove to any reasonable person that this is in fact a requirement of the job. I would agree with you that one way to do that would be if the language in the MOU specifically stated it. But I think you have to agree that there are many other ways to come to that determination than just relying on the language in the MOU.
Well, there may be any number of different ways to do it, but
And that's what I'm asking, is that you don't just consider this as the only way, but consider that there are other ways and that the employer, in this case Confire, is more than willing to sit down under any type of audit and prove to you that this is in fact a requirement of the assistant chief's job to be on standby.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
So to try to move this off to center, notwithstanding that colloquy. In deference to Supervisor Anderson, who had to leave, I would suggest we provide direction to our staff to look at the issue of pay, the analysis that is undertaken for employees, that pay must be for service within the position's normal working hours as set forth in the applicable employment agreement. And that with respect to that item and that inquiry, that we provide direction to staff to consider how the MOU in question is actually applied by and performed by the respective parties. That is, not what the parties think about what the language means or what they might talk about endlessly, but rather what the practice and implementation was by the parties of the MOU. And I think if we could develop that type of information as to the class of persons affected by the MOU language, then we could potentially resolve one way or the other whether that particular item of standby or on-call pay was or wasn't required of all persons working within that class. I think that's the question before the House. The MOU would be dispositive of that if it said it. That's the first line of inquiry and the best line of inquiry. I think if I understood what Supervisor Anderson said, that's how I would frame direction to staff and to bring it back, and let's look at it and see what the data and the application and the practice actually show. That's my suggestion.
And just so that I'm clear on the direction to staff, are you looking at on a go forward basis how we conduct that review, or are you looking at, you know, looking back at recent calculations that we've done or something around that? What did you have in mind?
What I have in mind, and I would certainly invite comment from others who may be more knowledgeable, is to look at the practice of the classification in question, which is assistant fire chiefs, and how the practice of assigning standby or on-call actually occurs, not what we intended or what we thought it was, how it actually occurs, whether everybody worked it, and if there are memoranda, any form of writing or direction that supports and corroborates that every assistant chief worked it within that classification. So it's sort of like drilling down to show that the facts of what we thought the MOU said actually happened in practice.
So would it be the intention to look at some, if there have been recent retirements of assistant fire chiefs, to look at those and see what the practice was around those, or is this a go forward as assistant chiefs possibly retire, we take a look at it at that point?
Well, I'm thinking of a current practice. You know, as we sit here today, what's the current practice? I mean, the facts are what they are. We have to know what the practice is. And once we know what the current practice is, we can talk about, I guess, whether how long that's been the practice,
okay,
and what that shows. I think that's okay. Probably useful to look at. It'd be useful to look back at some reasonable period of time, whatever that is. Has it always been that way?
Gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
That'd be my recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only thing I'd like to add is, to the best of my knowledge, this only affects one person so far. It's Chief Gonzalez, who's sitting in the room here, and it really has had no other impact on any other retirements from our organization. So in looking back, I just don't want there to be any mistake that would be some huge workload. It's really one person.
Great.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the clarification.
I think there's also a local 1230 member, which is a fire inspector, which has a similar situation as well.
You're correct. I just meant at the assistant chief level.
Okay.
Is yeah. Yes. But you are correct. That's being looked at also.
Have an obligation then to go across and look at all of the other entities that might be involved here?
It depends on what the board would like staff to take a look at.
Well, I'd like to see this one in question, of course, which is the assistant chief, and to Scott's point, to see what is actually being practiced To be completely honest, when I read the MOU, I see as assigned, and I understand my role in the organization, I'm assigned as a, you know, as the assistant chief, but there is no option for me to say, no, I don't want to be on call. So I don't see it really as an option. I don't see it, you know, it doesn't, our policy, which is law, to Scott's point, you know, does not say that the MOU has to use the word with quotes required or anything like that. It says as required, and again, to see what's practiced by both parties of the language, I would like to see that both on the management resolution that's in question right now with the assistant chiefs and also local 1230s as well, because I know that was just a that was an issue I think back in May 2018. So very similar situation.
Dr. McDonald.
So I would be cautious about using MOUs as the Bible, and they're far from perfect. And just being involved with MOU negotiations with the county, even when we've approached the county for MOU language cleanup to comply with current labor law, we've heard no to the language change from the county without explanation, just simply no. And it's not like it's something that we can strike over that. So MOUs are far from perfect, and I think you have to consider what is the current practice and other methods to prove the point, but using the MOU as one of those points of information, but they should be better than they are, but a lot of it is determined by jostling and negotiations and all kinds of garbage.
Unfortunately, it's the primary basis upon which the actual determination is made.
Yeah, per the writ return, yeah. To Dr. McDonald's point, Chief, I believe you mentioned in November that you actually approached the county about clarifying the language.
Once I left the meeting here, I did go back to the county, and the board and the CAO agreed it was intended to be pensionable. The job descriptions, everything are in that direction. And when asked if we could adjust the language, even in the management under MOU, if you'll call it that, the answer was no. We won't go in and open up an MOU mid-contract to change this language. So our plan is definitely to, as we did with the battalion chief's contract, our intent is to run the language for next negotiation cycle in, I think it's June of this year. We'll run that by CSERA to make sure that language is what they want, but mid-cycle, it's just difficult to get anybody to open up it.
But that could have been done by a side letter. Side letter agreement.
Side letter, yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and again, we talked about that. The side letter was also, you know, and I understand. The county is negotiating with many, many different contract units and labor units, and so unfortunately they didn't see fit to do it at the time.
Hardy, thank you. Then Rusty?
Just a point of information. Both the unrepresented resolution, the management resolution that covers the assistant chiefs and the local 1230, the current MOU there, both date back to 2017. And Terry Gordon, current, so Trustee Gordon referred to current practices. Perhaps that would be sufficient to look at the practices, since those are the current applicable documents that the parties are operating under. So I just put that out. Maybe going back to 2017 would be sufficient if you're going to look at both of those categories.
That certainly works for me. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a great point of departure.
Rusty?
And just again, for clarification, in the comments section, Harvey, you say MOU or equivalent. What would be an equivalent to an MOU?
In this case,
the
unrepresented.
Just the resolution, okay.
Just to the council's point on the going back to 2017, I'm not familiar with the details regarding the fire inspector's case. That may have been prior to a 2017 1230. Whatever the practice was, we should look at that. So.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Any board member have any objections to what was put forward by Scott?
No.
Okay. Do you feel you have direction?
I think so.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you all.
Recording excerpted.